You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You're listening to Sound Poetry on KTAH 101.9 Radio Tacoma. Today, I'm going to present a poet who is well known as a songwriter and a singer of Americana-styled music, what used to be more commonly called folk music, and Northwesterners will clearly know him, as I mentioned, Steve Niebuhr. All right, now let's go down the black hole.
Yeah, you know, I thought that while I'm doing this reading, I should just read a little bit that is me, I guess.
Yeah.
Me. So this is something that happens to people, I guess. Okay. The black hole. I'm falling down a black hole. The gravity squeezes my internal organs. I see my favorite stars disappearing as I fall deeper. My head feels like a too ripe tomato. I just saw an asteroid whiz by me. My fourth grade teacher flies by, a paddle in her hand, frown on her shriveled face, words hunkered down on her, a chalkboard in back of her. Speed is picking up now. I narrowly miss the Milky Way, the Big Dipper, Orion. I begin to weep. The tears brush my face, hot with regret. There is a baseball mitt, a hard ball, a bat that I could never hit the ball with. Down I fly into darkness, a gravity greater than I have ever experienced. My father is there. He wonders why I never hit the ball, why it always slips from the mitt. His face is kind. He takes his genetic responsibility seriously. Saturn is slipping away in my memory while Jupiter dances past my athletic brother. He stands tall in the black hole while I am compressed until I cannot be seen. I am falling down a black hole. Can you see me? I am sobbing now. Cannot stop falling down.
Do you have depressions at all, Steve?
Yeah, I think that it runs in my family. I feel like generally like I've been okay at dealing with them and managed to get my way through them.
And so here we have now cows, which has got to go somewhere into a green field, right?
Cows. I watched the news the other night. I had some idea of what I might see. Another black man had been murdered by the police. The operative words here are another black man murder police. I don't feel safe. You know what Martin Niemöller said? Then they came for me. You remember that, don't you? I have a big enough mouth. My mouth is like the motorcycles that roar through here on Sprague Avenue on Friday and Saturday night. It just loves to roar, doesn't care who hears. Then a black woman was killed in Louisville, Kentucky. There was a guy who I thought might have been a friend who was killed in Georgia a few months ago by some vigilantes, who I'm figuring might be coming after me sometime soon. The fascists break windows, start fires, throw frozen water bottles at the police. They're in a crowd of protesters. They're not protesting. They wait for the lights to go down, the fire to die into embers, the moon to go behind the clouds. Then they spread their bloody business around the country. I won't huddle in fear. I will speak my mind. I will run my mouth until after the cows are all gone to bed.
It is so easy in the course of thinking of our social conduct that so much goes into horror, even though one expects perhaps milk and cookies. Is it for the best?
For the best. We couldn't take it all with us. The machines were broken, pieces scattered everywhere around the room. We hadn't brought it to the ship all at once. We found it difficult to believe we were leaving, never to return. It had been a mission started, never finished. We had taken many rides along the surface of this planet. We had seen the giant leaves on the trees, the clear green water, the creatures with the tall legs, tiny tails, big heads grazing in the plains of blue. Now, it was time to go. We would never be in this place again. We said goodbye to our friends, had one last hug. We took what cases we had packed that would fit in the load limit of the ship, climbed aboard. From the sky, high above the atmosphere, the translucent clouds of red scattered in the green sky reminded us of why we must take our leave, why we had left our home planet dying in our dreams of wealth, how our machines had populated the atmosphere with carbon dioxide, killed the life we loved while we wallowed in our greed. No, we would leave this planet. We left a book with pictures, stories of our mistakes. Perhaps they will do better than us.
Fantasy. In the tree you said that we have no other world to go to. We know no other world.
Right. This is obvious. We also don't have space conveyances that can take us far enough to get to another habitable planet so far. So obviously that there's a good dose of fantasy here. This isn't the only thing written about us going to another planet. To be concerned about the life on that other planet, we wouldn't go there.
Because who's going to have the $1 million to buy the ticket? Captain Kirk did.
I think that maybe they'll bring the price down.
Well, I don't know if there'll be enough spaceships wagging their tickets to get on.
Yet there'll never be enough spaceships for everybody to get off the planet. You know, it's. I think that it's possible for us to change enough to survive on this planet. I think that it's possible. I'm not sure that it's plausible. Not because of physical things, but because of the nature of humanity. But let's talk about something that's kind of fun, huh?
Let's go to a bicycle and have a bicycle ride.
My bicycle. I tried to ride my bike today. Couldn't get myself situated. I decided to try my drone, which helped me to see where I was going. The water was kind of deep. I had my snorkel, though. The tires started to float. I was riding sideways in the water. Started to fly. Got myself situated. Was rolling down a hill in hard rain. Had wet brakes. I wondered if I'd stopped, then remembered that I had stopped in 1994. I love the two-wheel thing. It seems to have a homing device. It goes directly to our post office, local chocolatier, bike shop, park, either up or down the hill. Last night I was riding in the dark. I thought I heard a drone overhead. Turned out to be what I thought, only darker. It sounded kind of like my tires on smooth concrete. I guess it saw my lights. My bicycle has been telling me things since the late 70s. In 1978, it told me I was vital, alive on top of two wheels. Today I got a warning from my bike. It said, go slow. Take it easy. You are not as young as you were.
But it's one way to stay a little bit youthful.
Right.
And people will get back to those analog days, perhaps, on a two-wheeler without electricity. Haunted. Here we are, getting haunted. Some haunting images in your poetry, Steve, anyway. No matter if it's a haunted poem or not, you seem to include macabre imagery.
Yeah.
It's something you're very fond of.
But anyway, haunted. I felt it come from nowhere, a rush of feeling, sorrow deeper than the deepest lake, despair like I am the last being on earth. There was no place that I had been or place where I now found myself that could ever explain the way I felt. I lay all day upon my bed with the feelings running through me. Despair, deepest sorrow, dread. Something must have happened. Perhaps there was a person near to whom the emotions did belong, for they could not belong to me. There was sun in the winter sky. There wasn't any rain. Still, the feelings coursed all through my brain. They haunted me in blackest terms. It must have been a person close who transmitted all the sorrow. It must have been something really bad that had happened. So I come to tell you of this thing. It is something that you could not touch, could not see or hear, except to hear from me. It is a memory of a haunting. Now that day is gone, though it is not too far from the sorrow. It will be further off tomorrow. And of course, you talked about depression before, and that's my description of depression.
It's as though you can't try to get out of it or rid yourself of it.
Right.
You have to wait for it to take its way out.
But so far, eventually, it always has managed to go away. I think that this may be the last of the COVID poems that I was going to read. This is called The Plague. The Plague. We began the march in January. News reports we don't remember now. They came online from antique radios, televisions. The plague began. Reports came from China first. I started watching television like it was 1989. I could have been a Super Bowl fan, an addict of a television show. They were displaying corpses lined up, white-coated doctors from China, reporters explaining death, how it came early in so many, pretending like it couldn't happen here while it was. Pangolin? Bats, sure, but not pangolins. A farmer's market in Wuhan, decked out in hospital beds, refrigerator trucks full of corpses, men in uniforms telling us, "Don't look here, nothing to see, keep moving, world." We kept moving. The Chinese discovered it. December. Mm-hmm. Our government found business, fear, virus, corpses they tried to make invisible. Bad business hanging in the AM radio. Nothing to see here, keep moving. February, the corpses started peeking out from under white sheets, hiding in body bags, haunting the evening news. The story here started by Elliott Bay. You could still hear the seagulls, waves lapping the shores as the city streets emptied out. Silence. We had all seen the movie. It has become the movie of the year. The plague. The strangeness echoes from the empty streets, rang against the empty buildings, held some fascination for us. We held together the emptiness in the face of adversity. The faces on the screens warned us of the business failures. The bodies piled up. The numbers grew larger. We saw the numbers in our dreams, painted on the sidewalks, murals with numbers haunting us in the lonely spring air. In Minneapolis, the police murdered George Floyd. The policeman put his knee on George Floyd's neck. I can't breathe until he breathed no more. We filled the streets in all the major cities of the empire. Tens of thousands in the streets. Whose streets? Our streets. Some of us stayed home with our new friend, the coronavirus. At first we could bask in an empty park. Then the zombies found us. We no longer left the house. The numbers piled up, an excavating project where the pile of soil removed from the earth grows ever higher. Refrigerator trucks in New York lined up outside hospitals. Texans laughed, maskless in the Texas sun. The trucks moved to El Paso. The bodies stacked up, too much for the funeral homes. They were like the white lines on a highway that goes on forever. We watched the screens, the reporting. Governors in denial, not Egypt. afraid of the truth, the refrigerator vans filled with corpses. We shouted at the screens like ghosts crying in the dark, weeping as the reporters, the governors, the fools without masks walking in the streets, filling the factories, then filling the hospitals, finally filling the refrigerator trucks. How many hours, tears, gnashing of teeth, weeping in the houses with grandchildren growing another year older, businesses going under, crawling beneath the wreckage of the numbers. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the climate was changing. Who was it that said the plague had something to do with climate change? You don't want the stock market to crash, do you? You don't want those billionaires who are making tons of money off the pandemic to be unhappy, do you? You simply paint a mural over it all. You cover the refrigerator trucks with paper monkeys, smiling giraffes, clown faces, children playing in a park. You tell the zombies to look over here. This is how it is. Don't worry. Be happy. How many is a 500,000? Twice the number that live in my hometown. The number is over 1,000,000 now. It is cold in Texas. Their power is out. Their governor blames it on the scientists who he says invented global climate change, wind generators, solar electricity. The plague.
That comes across rather like a newsreel from the future with black and white, snowy photography showing the imagery.
It's the past.
So now we're going to move to some poetry that's more recent. Would we say it's more recent, or?
Yeah, I think this next one is 2022. We went to see Medea Benjamin the other night. She's the founder of Code Pink, and also I heard a podcast from The Daily, which, let's see, I think it's the New York Times that does The Daily. It was about Germany and about how they're building up their army and their weapons. And there's also some discussion about how this is happening in other places. It's happening in other places in Europe. And, of course, we're building up our weapons. And somebody mentioned World War One and how this was how World War One started, was with the everybody talking about, hypothetically, how they could carry on a war. A new season. I have planted seeds for the new season. They're coming up now. Someone is dying in a war. The fighting is far from here. I'm looking forward to putting the plants in the ground, which is too cold now. The bombs have been falling. Children are being killed. I know where I can put the plants, so I visualize the ground. Young men are killing each other. A general only sees a battle plan. There are places where the sun sees the soil for long hours. My radio played a funeral for a colonel yesterday. They buried him in his native ground. My baby plants are getting bigger each day. Still, they lack the strength to withstand the cold. Missiles flew to cities today. They knocked down walls, left the dead inside. I take care to keep these small plants warm. They are kept in moist soil, making them happy. People are fleeing their homes, the road, and another country is safer than home. Soon, I must prepare the soil for my plants. I will pull the weeds, soften the dirt. They discuss on the news who will win, yet it is a game to the death. I do my best to make a good home for my plants. I fertilize, take weeds out, loosen the soil. There are huge explosions, sound of automatic weapons. A baby is crying. A mother is lost in grief. I'm looking forward to the heart of summer. Then the little plants will be large. We do our best to quell our fear. I turn off the news of bombs and bullets. I want to see the sweet red peppers, the colorful tomatoes, blood-red beets. Blood and body parts cloud my thoughts, though I try. The explosions remain in my dreams.
So even though you're about the business of planting for a new season, you can't escape the thoughts of the horrors of the outer world that have been inculcated in you. They interweave even while you're thinking positive things.
Right.
We have to have a way to adjust. Even though we're about the business of making the world more fertile, the ground productive, and then all of the killing that's going on around, the burials.
You were asking earlier about our history, and are we revisionist? And it seems to me like people should be familiar with wars by now, and there shouldn't ever be a rah-rah for my side. There shouldn't ever be a rah-rah for any side. Humans create this horror. And here, in our everyday life, we don't have a war happening in Tacoma, but it sure is happening in another part of the world.
But I think it's very interesting how there's a kind of tenderness going on, careful tending of seeds to sprouts and changing their placement in perhaps a greenhouse.
Right.
That you have a house for the plants, but at the same time you're talking about people being evacuated from their homes, chased out of their homes, nowhere else to go to find a home.
Right.
And that kind of contrast is, I think, very interesting in this poem. And so the back and forth really is quite chilling. And towards the end, the coloration of it also is leaves you with horrific imagery, too.
Right.
So we go on to Vinales.
Vinales.
Where you have been.
This is in Cuba. And first we were in Havana and traveling to places outside of Havana with a tour called Human Agenda. We were visiting workers' co-ops. And we were learning from the Cubans, how do you do a workers' co-op? What is moral? And how do you create moral work environments? So that was good. And then there were three of us, Dave Zink, my wife Christy, and myself, traveled to Vinales, which is a rural place. And it is built into a touristy scene, but at the same time, the people there, let me just read Vinales. The ox makes his way across the ground, a man speaking to him as he goes. The field is being prepared once again for frijoles, for corn, which will grow high. The Cuban morning has lit up the mojotes. Birds are making their joyful noises. Roosters crow. Sebastian, the pig, is trying to sleep in. It is the start of another day in Vinales. Now you can hear the cars, the clip-clop of hooves on the pavement. Everyone goes cautiously on the broken roads of Cuba. An old horse grazes alongside the road. A chicken runs, flaps its wings, rises like it might take flight, makes it to the other side like the old joke. Palm trees line the road. We walk the road as an old woman approaches us. She is smiling, excited about the Americans, invites us in for tea. At the police station, there is a young cow grazing on the lawn. We wonder, what does a policeman do in Vinales? The hurricane took out much of the botanical garden. Nothing to do but have dinner there. We walk to the organic farm, past horses, small houses under construction, the bus barn, passed by a horse and a cart, tourists on horses, buses on the way to the restaurant up on the hill. Our days are lazy in a busy kind of way, like life in Vinales.
Quite a change from your normal routines to go to this place.
It was.
Change of pace and the rhythm that changes as you quieten down. Yeah, it's good to quieten down. We have to sometimes go to another country to do that.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that was what the idea was. We went to experience another country and people who lived there. But
are we going to have any certainty?
Certainty? You never had that certainty. You could never swing that hammer. You were supposed to know which school, what direction it was you were going. Always found you wandering in the dark like you were searching for some ancient sphinx, an army long gone, hidden in a cave located in a mountain deep inside your own subconscious. You were always searching. That apparently was your mission. It took you places where you never could bring yourself to admit you were on vacation. You were always working, trying to find absolution from what you never could say. You walked those sticky roads, smelling the flora and fauna as you lurched through life, feeling that you might be some kind of Frankenstein, built by a mad civilization to wander in a desert of expectations, never to find certainty.
And in the search for certainty, which is never really discovered, you have a hidden place to read us.
Hidden place? What have you hidden there, under the rock, behind the shelf, a place far in the past, something you thought yesterday? Who you are, what you'll be, what you saw last week? When will you tell us? This is the question. What great danger lies there in the thing that you are hiding, in the place where you keep secrets? I see your secret in your face when I ask you the question, the sly smile, slightly downturned lip, eyes light up. What makes you so important that you think someone will care about something they don't know, something they don't see there? All the same, you keep the thing hidden like it was Frodo's ring, a secret that might save the world, you keep carefully concealed. Who you are, what you'd be, what you don't want the rest to see, your hidden place.
Left, much left to ruminate about there. No hidden place discovered.
Yeah.
But the secret, you say the secret, you see the secret in the face. You do have a line there that says that there is a secret that's shown. Right? I see your secret in your face. But that, is that the hidden place?
I think that the secret is in an expression. You know, I don't see exactly what it is. I see there's a secret, not that I know what the secret is.
All right.
I think I'll read just one more poem. And this is one that I didn't give you.
All right.
So you don't get to read it along with me.
Oh, well, let me listen to this one.
This is a poem I wrote for our friend Sally Shaw. And Sally built her own house out in the woods and in the wilds of Key Peninsula. And the name of this poem is Gingerbread House. You bought your own piece of forest. I always admired that. A small woman in her gingerbread house in the forest. Forest is being torn down all around you. The living trees have no rights except the right to become lumber, firewood, be left to rot on the floor of the earth. I don't know how trees can't matter. They speak to me with their elegance, beauty, majesty. You were saving your trees. I can't get some things out of my head. You, such a relatively small creature, wield your love for the birds, small creatures that live in the forest, like Excalibur, carving away fear, destruction, through the fabric of money, material, a false sense of what it means to be human, leaving the large trees whose canopy forms a home for so many creatures besides yourself. Someday, Hansel and Gretel will come, marvel at the lovely little house in the forest. The gingerbread will still be fresh, smell like an evergreen forest, preserved for just such a boy and a girl.
Yes, Sally Shaw, a good friend of Stephen Christie's and many who have done charitable work in Tacoma. Well, I thank you so much, Steve, for being so generous to open up and let us into some of the hidden places and take us on roads that we haven't been along. And people who have known you as a songwriter will now learn that you have great wealth of poetry there that you can read. And listeners will probably be, I think, inspired perhaps to pick up a pen and write about their own experiences, since most of these seem to be from your thoughts, your mind, and from the real experiences of your travels.
Right.
Thanks for coming on, Steve. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you very much, David, for having me on Sound Poetry.
You've been listening to Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore. You've been listening to the poems of Steve Niebel on Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM.
And once again, thank you, David.